Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Support WrestleTalk.
Donate on Patreon.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Luke Owen and I'm joined by El Fakator Laurie Blake.
Hello.
How are you, mate?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
So the audio in this might sound slightly different because if you are one of our pod swafters and not someone who watches the YouTube channel, although actually you'll have this podcast up first, so you will be the first to see this
hear it.
See it
with your ears.
We've got new microphones.
Oh, yeah.
There's a new mic set up in the studio. That's why this podcast is late. Very sorry about that. But yeah, we were setting it all up yesterday. We had our technician in who was setting it all up. We've got a big new camera rig set up here in the studio for the Wrestle Ramble. And new mics. We got rid of the headsets.
Oh, yeah.
And we are now on actual podcast mics.
It's weird. I can hear the room sound.
You right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I much prefer this.
Yeah, this is nice.
I much, much prefer this. So yeah, so this is all very, very exciting. And there's a phase two of this setup that is to be done, which I think probably be worked out by next week. Our technician's coming back in on Wednesday to kind of iron out some of the kinks. And yeah, multi-camera.
That extreme close-ups.
That is the tease that I will give you for this. But how's your week been?
Yeah, it's been very good, thank you. I cannot remember what I've done this week. Not a lot, actually. Mm. It's been a very quiet one for me, whereas the last few weeks have been lots of running around and seeing people and doing stuff. I'm quite glad that I've been at home most evenings, just taking it chill.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had like a couple of evenings more or less to myself because my wife's been out.
Dreaming.
So I've been able to, like, I've restarted Resident Evil 2 because I played it on Tuesday, just continuing on through the Chris campaign on standard setting. And I've just realized that, like, I was really struggling with it, and the reason why I'm struggling is because I can't aim. Suck at aiming. I had this problem with Uncharted. I can't aim on, like, modern games. I don't know what's up with me. I haven't got the calibration for it. But if you put it onto the assisted setting on Resident Evil 2, it essentially auto aims for you. It doesn't auto aim perfectly. If you're looking at a character, though, it will also aim for you.
The baby's version you're playing.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. But, like, just so that if you're facing it, it'll just start pointing its chest, and then you can move it if you want to point to its head. Although I was reading
it. That's the original Resident Evil controls.
Exactly, which is probably why I'm a bit better at it. but it's I read an interesting thing about Resident Evil 2. If you are new to this podcast and you're wondering, why are you not talking about NXT? We'll get there eventually.
We'll get there, yeah. It's a ramble.
Exactly, yeah. We're doing this from rambling. I read a really interesting thing on Twitter. Apparently, that the way that Resident Evil 2 is designed, that no matter where you shoot a zombie, it does the same amount of damage.
Oh.
So you can spend time constantly aiming for headshots, but you can just shoot them in the chest and it'll do the same amount of damage. It'll take the same amount of kills, the same amount of shots to take them down.
Wellicky.
Yeah, so that has actually saved me quite a little bit of stress, because previously I have been aiming for the heads and wondering why they've not been going down as quickly. And it's because you don't need to.
Sometimes you don't need to see behind the curtain, though. I feel like feeling like headshots is better pushes you to try harder to, like...
Yeah, but that kept getting me
killed.
It's
more high stress, you know. I think that's... Yeah, I just... You want it to be stressful. It's meant to be stressful.
Yeah, but it made me lose.
Yeah,
I was getting tired of losing.
How many people win the apocalypse, Luke? How many people? Not many.
I suppose you're right. I was thinking that while I was playing it, that... You could tell that I'm not a teenager anymore with just, like, unlimited hours on my hands. Because when I got to a point where I didn't really know what to do, and I'm like, I'm just going to go online and just look at what to do. Like, whereas if I was a teenager, I'd have then just spent the next, you know, 3 hours exploring the police station to work out what I had to do.
Yeah.
Whereas I literally was sitting there going, like, I don't know. I'm stuck now.
My tolerance for puzzles has gone down.
Oh, massively. Dramatically. Yeah.
I'm Googling how to finish levels on Super Mario like, at the moment, because I'm just trying to get through the game at lunchtime. So
totally.
If I can't find all the coins, like the star coins in New Super Mario's Bro U Deluxe, whatever, I'm just like, Google.
Tell
me where the secret exit is. I don't care.
Because I'm playing Phoenix Wright on my iPad on the way home. Like, when I used to play Phoenix Wright back in the day, when I used to play on my trips back from my home in Reading to Portsmouth University.
Yeah.
And that's like a 2.5 hour train ride, right? Like, and it's a long old train ride. Mm-hmm. So when I was playing it at home, but I was also playing, I loved going on those long journeys because I've got 2.5 hours here to just get into these cases and play me some Phoenix Wright. And this was back in the day before you really had the internet on your phone. So if you got stuck, you'd be stuck, mate. You're stuck. So I would spend hours trying to work out what the clues were that I needed to present in order to win these cases. Yeah. You sort of spend hours kind of like poring over the detail and stuff. Now, I mean, granted, I've completed the games anyway, so I don't feel quite as bad about this. But if I just get stuck, I just go, I'm just going to quickly go on Safari. Walk through, where am I at? So I'll present that bit of evidence.
See, so that I always found, the interesting thing about Phoenix Wright is that is always the baffling bit of it. Like, presenting the evidence, even if your train of thought is right, sometimes if you don't do it in the right order, the game is just like, no, but he is guilty. And it's like, no, he's not guilty. I can tell you why.
I'm literally showing you why.
Yeah, but then you're like, the worst bit I find, though, is the investigation scenes where you're going like round crime scenes. Because there's always a bit where I got stuck in whatever one it was I was playing. Like, I would always get stuck where I just couldn't move the game on from that scene to go back to court. And I was like, I know I've kind of picked up everything.
Yeah.
And it would always be like, well, you've got to go to this one random place. And so I was like, what I would just do is like go through each scene sort of methodically, tapping everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Until something turns up. It was like when you're looking for the little hint coins in Professor Layton, you just like tap every lamppost, just going like, that one, hint coin, brilliant.
I know exactly the point you mean as well, Phoenix Wright, because I remember being at Game Station where I worked at university on the lav at that exact point, being like, I have done everything there is to do. Why can I not advance this investigation?
Where is Maya?
Until I walked into, and then you suddenly said, oh, I've not pressed that. Oh, it was... You are kidding me.
Yeah,
but great game.
They're fantastic games, but too much clicking.
And brilliantly, as I've since discovered, they're all on the iPad now.
Oh,
so the entire series that's been released in the West anyway. There's a couple of like Japanese exclusive games that haven't made their way over.
Has the Sherlock Holmes one made it over?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. But all of the Phoenix Wright games, except for the Professor Layton crossover, are on the iPad.
Ooh.
Quite cheeky from Capcom, though, we'll say. It's 99p to download the game.
But it's only the first case.
Only the first part of the first case. And then you have to pay £15 to unlock the whole games, which I think is fine. I think paying £15 for the whole game is actually quite reasonable, considering the amount of hours you get on the game, and it's cheaper than buying a DS. This and the other, then don't charge me £1 to download a demo.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. That is a bit.
That's where I get a bit. I think that's a bit cheeky.
Yeah,
it's a bit Capcom.
But then Capcom's MO this year seems to be re-release everything on the Switch. So we'll find out. Like, there'll be every game will come out on the Switch this year. Well, they've got Resident Evil HD remake, Resident Evil Zero remake, Resident Evil 4 coming out.
Nice.
Onimusha came out recently. Dragon's Dogma is coming out. I wouldn't be surprised if we get some sort of Monster Hunter World skin down, or they'll make up another one that comes in between generations, or Ultimate X, or whatever they're calling it. Like, I imagine Devil May Cry might appear at some point, because Devil May Cry 5 is coming out on other consoles.
That's what I was about to say, yeah, particularly because they've just released the demo for that as well.
Mm.
So I can definitely... They released it yesterday.
I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Yeah, I know, right? I was thinking that as well. But I've got to just finish a game that I've got.
Yeah,
like, I still haven't finished Spider-Man. I've not finished Alien. I've not finished Resident Evil 7. I've not finished any of the games I've bought, and I just keep buying new ones.
See, I'm cross about Devil May Cry, though, because I liked the reboot that Ninja Theory did.
Yeah, the DMC, right?
Yeah, DMC I thought was great. I thought a really brilliant game, a really nice remake, clever, like took away some of the bits that were a bit stale about Devil May Cry, whereas this is very much just like, we're just giving you exactly what you wanted, nostalgia for something that was now 11 years old and was outshined by Bayonetta literally a couple of months later, DMC4 was naff. It was naff.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think it looks cool, but also, I just kind of wish Ninja Theory had been left with it for just once more. Like, even if they just didn't do the combat, even if, you know, Team Little Devils came in, did the combat for DMC, and Ninja Theory were just left to do the animation and the story and all that stuff. Because all that stuff and all the imaginative, like, enemy designs, I really loved in DMC. And I just think we're going back to sort of cheesy, like, schlocky rock nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was cool when I was 15 and I first saw Devil May... I first saw the bit in Devil May Cry where he, like, has a whole gunfight while a bit of pizza's in the air and then catches the pizza. Yeah. I was like, he's the coolest man of all time. I hope I grow up to be a Dante. But now I'm just like, oh, it's a bit naff, innit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think Zero Punctuation in their review of Devil May Cry said that it was basically like having a spider and a scorpion. And then you just... Oh, no, you have, like, a spider fighting a big load of like an army of red ants, and then you just pour red and green gummy bears over the winner. Anyway, I butchered that ever so slightly. I can't quite remember what it was. The review came out 10 years ago. Anyway, we're going to move on to the NXT review. Yes, we do talk about wrestling on this show as well. So we're going to be kicking off talking about Io Shirai, and her pinning Shayna Baszler on this week's show. Here's the episode. But anyway, so we're going to talk about NXT. I hope you all enjoyed the show. And it closed with a six-man tag between Bianca Belair and the Sky Pirates against three of the four horsewomen. And it was a decent little match. Like, it wasn't a particularly great match or anything like that. But I thought that the story that it told within the match was actually really, really great.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought, so the outcome of the match is that Io Shirai picks up a pinfall victory over Shayna Baszler,
the current NXT Women's Champion.
NXT Women's Champion, obviously setting up the idea that Io Shirai might be a new contender to the throne.
Mm-hmm.
However, Ms. Bianca Belair, she weren't very happy about that.
No, she wasn't. And the commentators did such a great job of putting this over. Because Belair spent a lot of the match on the apron, not really doing a great deal. And then she finally blind tagged herself in because she was like, I've had enough of this. I want in on this match.
It was a really good tag as well. Yeah. I love the fact that they were doing, you know, the Sky Pirates were kind of rolling and doing their tag team offense.
They were going for a hot tag. Yeah.
They were going for the tag, and she literally just swings over and goes, I'm in.
I'm in now. And she hits the KOD on Baszler to get a pin, but that pin was broken up. But the key to this is that Io was the one who did pick up the pin with the moonsault off the top on Baszler, as you said. And the commentators did a great job of putting this over quite subtly, but it just plays into the bigger picture. That of the three women on that team, Belair is the only one not to have pinned Baszler.
Mm-hmm.
Because Saint's pinned her in the past, Io has pinned her now, and they're the only two women in the NXT women's roster who have pinfall victories over Shayna Baszler. Mm. And that is the sort of thing that the character of Bianca Belair that is just going to eat away.
Oh, yeah.
Her.
But this is what I found so interesting about this match, was because, you know, the reason she doesn't pick up the pinfall victory here, even though she hits the KOD, is because she doesn't work with the team.
Yes.
She wants to tag herself in, run off on her own. The other two get taken out. Duke and Shafir have got Baszler's back. Bianca Belair, as her song says, is on her own against the world. Mm-hmm. And it ain't paying off for you, love.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, and I just think that's kind of the point here, is that Io Shirai wins with help from Kairi Sane.
Yeah.
Because she's keeping Shafir and Duke out of the match.
Yeah.
So does she low bridge or something? Does it take them over the top, I think, towards the end of it? Like, there was something like that that led to Io Shirai being able to do the Asai moonsault.
Yeah, and Kairi Sane took out Duke and Shafir on the outside. She did like a cross body from the top rope to the floor. And actually, on the replay, you can see Sane gets up onto the apron, not to watch her friend get the pin, but to protect the ring in case Duke and Shafir get back up and try it. So she literally sits on the ring and puts her arms out as if to protect the pinfall, which I thought was a really, really nice spot.
I mean, it's a bit tight on Bianca Belair from them, though, that they haven't been helping her out thus far in the match. It's a bit tight.
It is, yeah. But you got to wonder if this is like with the promo that Belair cuts at TakeOver Phoenix Wright, where which we saw on last week's show, sort of like a post-match thing, where she said, I'm still undefeated. Mm-hmm. Like, she still believes this idea that she is undefeated. Whether this is going to lead to a much more... And I want to say that a heelish Bianca Belair, but she's kind of a heel character already. Yeah. She's a heel character that gets cheered.
She's an egocentric character.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah, right.
Sort of.
That's it. And she is a great example of this sort of this new school mentality of we don't have baby faces and heels, we just have characters, mm-hmm. which I completely get on board with. And this Bianca Belair really does feel like a good example of that mentality.
Yeah.
Particularly if she is going to be going down this route of like more heelish to a degree.
Yeah.
Because she is, as you say, egocentric. She genuinely believes she's undefeated.
Yes.
And now she's going to be looking at these two women who are smaller than her. They're not as fittest as her. They're not as bestest as her. And she's going to have a bit of a chip on her shoulder about that.
Absolutely. And I think that's the cool thing about this kind of like, if you're not having heels or baby faces, it doesn't have to be a heel turn. She just has to react to the stimuli.
Exactly.
It's like,
yeah.
That's the cool thing. It's like, you know, her being I'm undefeated, I'm being all braggy was because she was perfectly within her rights to. But her character is to be braggy and egocentric. So it's interesting to then see how she would react to not losing, but to being outshined.
Yeah, exactly.
Like whether she steps up. And that, I think this is probably more to the point of like where this is going. Potentially, this seems to have set up a Io Shirai, Shayna Baszler thing down the line, but also setting up probably in the interim an Io Shirai, Bianca Belair match for the number one contendership.
Yeah, like a little mini feud to
yeah,
to lead
I think so.
That,
like,
yeah.
So, you know, we've got a few months yet, so we'll have this for a bit.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Then we'll start to step up the game towards TakeOver, whatever it is.
Well, I'm going to guess it's called Brooklyn 5,
yeah.
Because it is going to be in Brooklyn for Mania weekend. So we'll say Brooklyn for now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can definitely...
TakeOver Brooklyn Beckham.
I can definitely see them doing... Io versus Baszler at TakeOver Brooklyn, Brooklyn Beckham. Because I think that's a really good direction to go. Io's such a great talent. She's great.
Mm.
And she's getting really over with the crowd. And her act with Sane is a tremendous little act. I'm a big fan of the Sky Pirates.
Yeah, I like it.
Although, I will say, during the entrance that Kairi Sane had, she gave her hat to Izzy. Izzy, yes. The famous Bailey band Izzy. She gave her hat to Izzy. And I could see... WrestleTalk fan and WrestleTalk watcher Karen just a little way down from where Izzy was sat, and I was like, Karen is a much bigger fan of Kairi Sane than Izzy is. Why didn't Karen get the hat?
Next time,
absolutely, yeah. The other thing,
she just come out like Ronda Rousey and just give out multiple hats. That's it, you know, or like the New Day and just pour a bucket of hats onto them.
The other thing to talk about from this match before we get into the main review is that I suppose two things. But they're related to the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Duke and Shafir are currently the worst backup for Baszler ever. Because, I mean, Brian Alvarez pointed this out on Twitter, and it's completely correct. They haven't got a win on TV.
No.
They haven't won anything. They have helped Baszler out. Like, you cannot deny that they helped out during Evolution in order to pick up the win for Baszler. Yep. But... in ring, they seem very ineffectual because they keep bloody losing.
Yeah, they have not got a good track record. They've not even got a good track record of interfering. Like, that was the only one that worked. Every other one. I don't even think the one at last TakeOver when, you know, Shayna manages, they stall a bit and then Shayna picks up the victory over Belair. But I wouldn't even put that down. That didn't feel like that was down to the very easily dealt with run-in.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It just felt like it was like, Baze is quite good. Like, she can manage.
Yeah. And I'm actually really getting on board with the Duke and Shafir. I quite like their in-ring work, actually. And I think they've got a really good look about them, particularly Duke. I think Duke looks so impressive because she's about 12 foot tall. Mm. She just towers above everyone. I think she looks really awesome. But there were a group of guys in that crowd that were really harping on them. Anytime Marina Shafir was in the ring, chanting, "You can't wrestle at her," and just chanting really like obscene things at them, which I was really, I felt really like, bad about. Like, I thought that was really unfair on them.
There was like some "please tag Shayna" chants and stuff like that. It's like, you realize you are watching developmental.
Yes.
What do you want?
Like, yeah,
you know,
not everyone is Ricochet or Johnny Gargano when they come in.
Exactly. But that's the point, isn't it? Some people are like, the developmental territory of WWE is either they've picked up athletes who were good at other things and are transitioning them into wrestling, or they pick up amazing wrestlers who aren't quite good enough to go on the main roster yet, or they don't think are quite ready to go on the main roster yet. Like Ricochet, while he's an amazing in-ring athlete, his promo work has got amazing since he's been in NXT because he's clearly getting lessons in that sort of stuff.
That's it,
like, you know, it's... everyone has stuff to work on. It's just, I think actually Duke and Shafir are very good at character and are working on the in-ring stuff. and I think they've been impressive so far.
I completely, aside from the fact that they haven't won.
Storyline wise, they've been terrible.
They've been awful.
Like,
I
think in terms of like looking at it from outside, pretty good. I would be happy with their debut.
I completely agree.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
We've got to shout out some of our $25 and above pledge hammers. Can you see that list?
I can see the list.
Excellent. So, big thank you to Britain's Next Top Model, Phil Stopford.
Woo! Oh, yes. Phil! I trust you as Sam Farrer as I can throw you.
Oh, Sam, there he is. Sean El Blandito Blanford. Oh, he's not bland him.
Sorry, I'm not clapping as hard because I'm trying to read the next one.
Shimigangot
Zachary Robert Crowley Bados.
Oh, what a name.
What an epic name.
Don't really understand it.
So long.
Have a cup of tea. Lee. His name's T. Lee.
Caught in a Travis Webb.
Caught. I'm caught. Help me. Save me. And lastly, for this episode, we're going on a Brian Huntley. Oh, Whey! Yes. Let's all go on it.
More terrible pun.
We'll have some more of your $25 and above shout-outs on the next Raw, SmackDown, and NXT episode. The show opened with Johnny Gargano coming out. Great crowd chanting for Johnny Champion. Mm-hmm. And he cuts a genuine babyface promo.
Yeah, I like it.
It felt like, it's almost like the Sami Zayn promo when he won the NXT Championship of being like, we finally come down this road together. We've been working together with this. And that's the promo that Gargano was cutting here, which is just like, we won it together, you guys.
Yeah.
We did this all together. And he was like, Johnny Wrestling is back. And it was, you know, Johnny Gargano as a character believes that Johnny Wrestling is back.
Yeah, the only way you could tell it was a heel promo is because he was doing smug face. Johnny Wrestling is back, you guys.
And he was, I think in his head, he doesn't look at, or like maybe he doesn't even remember doing the things that he did in the match, like peeling back the mat and things like that. Or he's just choosing to ignore that's how he won the match. Yeah. And there was a great moment because then Tommaso Ciampa comes out with his belt and he says, hey, look, I'm not here to take away from your moment. I'm just here to say that you followed Ciampa's lead. You followed the Ciampa's lead. And Johnny has this moment where he just looks like, he looks like he's only just realized that. Mm. And he's just got this look on his face like, did I?
That's where I got these ideas from.
It was such, it's Johnny Gargano is a great actor. Like, he's really good at getting across this character in these sort of like little moments. That's why I'm such a fan of his.
He's amazing. I think he's the best thing in NXT. He's just like he's a great character worker. He puts on amazing matches. He's a future main roster star.
He has to be.
You know, he could have the longest run with the Intercontinental or the US belt easily.
Yeah, yeah. He could be, I mean, I don't want to use the term, the new Daniel Bryan. But like, he very much could be like in that new Daniel Bryan role.
The new Daniel Bryan would have something to say about that.
New Daniel Bryan. New Daniel Bryan would want to wear some flannel. New Daniel Bryan would just want to wear comic book stuff. And Ciampa kind of says that this is what they've been working towards. This has always been their dream to be like champions together. It's what they always talked about on the road. And I think Gargano's got this sort of internal conflict where he's talking about like, we're not having our moment. I just came out onto the stage. I wasn't there to like, it's not a DIY reunion. You just happened to be there. And it's like, I thought it was really, really great stuff.
He was like, I came out to show you that I'm coming for you, basically. Yeah. And it was like, you did like a little bit. Also were a bit like, kind of
won. Like he did have a little cheeky look at the belt, but really this felt more like it was, you know, the heel DIY reunion. But this brings out Velveteen Dream. Velveteen Dream won the Worlds Collide tournament, which I've not seen any of.
And he's used the money from his winnings to buy a lovely turban and a set of silver hammer pants.
Well,
he looked fantastic.
When you've got style like a dream.
I feel like the wardrobe department must have an absolute field day with him where they're just like, you could just put him in anything. He looks great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just think that they've also got the easiest job in the world because they don't have to make any choices.
No.
Because he literally just comes up to them with a drawing and says, this, please.
Yeah, I want glasses with three eyes to make Matt Sydal jealous.
This would be lovely. No,
thank you.
So he comes out to say that he did win Worlds Collide, which means that he has got himself a championship opportunity at a champion of his choice, and he has picked Johnny Wrestling.
And this was quite weird, actually, because I thought the point of Worlds Collide was that you got a championship opportunity across any of the brands involved in Worlds Collide. But he phrased it here as like, I get an NXT championship opportunity of my choosing. Yeah. It was like, that's not what I thought
No, you're right. Sorry.
In the promos, they were only showing the top belts. It's not like NXT UK or 205 Live have different belts to go for. But this is such a rogue choice to be like, I'm after this one.
Yeah. Sorry, I mean, I didn't mean to try and cut you off there, but it was like, it felt like that WWE themselves didn't really know what this tournament was for, because there were some press releases that said, as you pointed out there, you can challenge for any belt across any brand. But there were some press releases that said you can challenge for any belt on your brand.
So the women's belt in NXT UK?
I guess so. Yeah, I think that was trying to eliminate this idea that Keith Lee could go for the 205 Live belt.
Yeah, I think it was a walk back. Because when I saw the promos for 205 Live, the actual video ones, they were like, you can challenge for any belt. And it showed all the belts except the North American title.
So I don't think they really knew. I think they just kept flip-flopping and changing their minds on what it
was. Bless him, though. The Velveteen Dream has made the worst choice of those three things. Apart from obviously the 205 Live move, the cruiserweight belt and then have to move the 205 Live, that's probably quite bad.
I mean, you move to 205 Live, which means you get seen by less people.
Yeah, look at Drew Gulak. He's desperate to get back to NXT, which we'll get onto later.
You do get seen by less people, but if you're a champion, you do get to go on kickoff shows.
That is true.
So there is, there's pluses and negatives to go into 205 Live. You just have to either be the champion or the number one contender in order to get anywhere. He points out that he doesn't want to face Ciampa. He wants to face Johnny Wrestling. But and then kind of putting over the... Gargano starts putting over this idea that, you know, while you were sitting on the sidelines, I was having a match of the year.
Mm.
And the following night, I was in the Royal Rumble. And you're like... Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were. Because you're awesome, Johnny Gargano.
It was a great weekend for Johnny Gargano.
Oh, really, really
was. But the Dream
does
come out saying, though, that he's like, well, this isn't about Johnny Wrestling. This isn't about Gollum and Goldie. This is about the man who made NXT TakeOver Phoenix just by turning up.
Yeah.
Because he did get a hell of a pop just for being there.
Absolutely,
the world's tightest red top.
And then he asks if you're going to see Johnny Wrestling or Johnny Jackass at NXT, for this title shot. And they leave, and sort of Gargano and Ciampa. Gargano sort of slowly walks past Ciampa, and they sort of have this little awkward moment, sort of pause with their titles. And I think they're doing a really, really nice job of stretching out this heel DIY reunion. Mm-hmm. I'm still putting my money down, although I've been proved many times wrong before that my predictions are awful, that we are going to have that tag match at TakeOver. There's not going to be an NXT championship match. I think there'll be a tag match. It'll be heel DIY versus Black and Dream or Black and Ricochet or even Ricochet and Dream if Aleister Black is elsewhere.
True.
So that's where I'm going.
I think this they're making quite a bit of story about them, just like their sort of circling of each other as well, because they've done a couple of walking up the ramps where they do it staggered or they go past each other. So I think, well, the moment they both go up the ramp together, they'll be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now we're friends.
I think they also do a really good job in NXT of kind of like separating what is canon and what is not, because like Gargano and Ciampa have teamed together on house shows and stuff, and like the MSG show in December last year, the Christmas one, they were on the same side, and at Halftime Heat they were on their same side, but they do a really good job of pretending that's not happened.
But I think they also did, even in Halftime Heat, they did a good job of those two being a bit wary of each other.
Yeah.
Like they do these great bits of storytelling stuff where like, there was a bit in the brawl that happened post-Phoenix between the six guys to set up Halftime Heat where someone swings for Gargano and the first person to step in the way is Ciampa.
He pushes
past Gargano to get in the way of this fist being flung. And they did the same thing in Worlds Collide. There was a few times where they're like, Johnny just didn't want to tag in Ciampa and he tags himself in. And there's you know, little bits of storytelling like that where it keeps going.
Yeah.
And I think if you're just made into a match, you kind of have to just run with it.
Absolutely,
as it is,
yeah.
You know?
I think they're very, very good at that.
They didn't bust out the kick in the middle or anything in Worlds Collide, which you could have easily...
Heat.
Yeah, sorry. Halftime Heat. You could have easily seen happen. So.
Yeah. It was... Yeah, I'm a big fan of this story. People have been asking if we're going to review Halftime Heat. Short review, it was excellent.
It was really good.
20 minutes of just non-stop thigh-slapping action. It was bloody wonderful.
My favourite bit is just when everyone has a go at diving. From the outside. They were just like, we'll all have a go. We'll see what happens.
My favourite review of the match was that it felt like a PWG match, which it really, really did. It felt like a Pro Wrestling Guerrilla six-man tag, and it was just 20 minutes of dives and moves. If you're a big fan of moves, then you will love Halftime Heat.
Do you know it's the most watched NXT thing
I saw,
ever?
Yeah. Great result for them.
Yeah, it's great.
We then got the Forgotten Sons coming out, or as I've called them, the Sons of Blandarchy.
Tell me
more. Yes, mate, punnage.
Sons of Blandarchy.
But it wasn't the other two. It was Jackson Ryker this time, which is, we've been saying...
Billy Big Boy.
Why isn't Billy Big Boy doing the wrestling? Here he is. He's the one doing the wrestling. This time against Mons or Mansoor, I guess.
Mansoor.
He was from the Middle East. Handsome little chap he was.
He did a lot of the Performance Center videos.
Yeah. Basically, this was a Jackson Ryker squash match. Hits him with a sort of like a modified sky high at the end. And then hits the move again after the match. Not really much to talk about.
Has to get dragged off by his mates.
Yeah,
it was a good bit where he speared him out of the air.
Oh, that was cool. That was great. Yeah, really, really cool. I like Jackson Ryker. A good intense stare. I just don't think this group is just not getting over at all.
Yeah, they've got real go away heat, haven't they? It's just one of those. I think it's one of those things that they do this sort of squash match thing with the big guys, and it doesn't do anything for them.
No,
like,
exactly.
Same with Dijakovic. It's like
Dijakovic.
Dijakovic. That's, I can't remember. It's impossible to remember how to pronounce Dijak.
Yeah,
like, it's really hard.
It's two syllables.
Yeah, I know. Just let's stick with that. Like. With Dijak, it's like, I feel like all of his squash matches that he's had so far haven't done as much to put him over as just having him in the Battle Royal at the beginning of Worlds Collide did. Because in that, he eliminates at least like four people and does all of his really cool stuff. And you're like, yeah, he's great. Like,
yeah.
He does a bit where I think it's TJP he's got. And he's just got him like that. And he just spins, you know, he does that big fling thing.
Yeah.
But he just does that and then over the top rope, like, bye, mate. Like, that sort of stuff is much better, like showing more variety, like even if the people fight back a little bit more, like it just makes it look good. Don't just do three moves and then your finisher.
And then stare.
Especially if your finisher is just a powerbomb-y thing.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know, at least Dijakovic is...
It's got that awesome like reverse GTS thing.
Yeah, wicked.
So cool. Backstage, Ricochet was having a photo shoot and Kathy Kelly was there hoping to get an interview with him. But up comes Adam Cole in the Undisputed Era being like, why do you want to interview that loser? Mm-hmm. I'm standing right here. I'm Adam Cole, baby. I should be interviewed.
I love how quietly he says baby. It's like
Adam Cole, baby.
It's like he's got Tourette's. He just has to say baby.
Yeah.
So I'm Adam Cole, baby.
Ricochet sort of walks up, and Cole calls Ricochet a one-trick pony, and Ricochet says that, you know, hey, Cole, you're at the back of the line, and this, that, and the other. Or Cole says that Ricochet will be back of the line because he's just lost the title. Ricochet reminds Cole that he beat him for the title, and a match is set up between the two to assumably crown a new number one contender. So that should be very good. And they also announced that the Gargano Dream match for the North American Championship will be in 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Then we got what was easily the best thing on the show. Well, yeah, Drew Gulak had a squash match against...
Drew Gulak was great.
Drew Gulak had a squash match against Eric Bugenhagen.
The Boogs.
The Boogs. My first note here is, well, he's my new favorite wrestler. He's got a sweet tash.
He was like a Mike Myers character.
He was basically, he's like Tyler, is Tyler Perry mixed with Joey Ryan. I love this lad. Like, he throws a guitar pick out to the crowd. He's there doing like the Johnny B. Goods, like Marty McFly, doing the air little kicks as you're walking with the guitar.
Plays along the ropes.
He goes to the ropes and starts playing the piano theme tune. He's great.
He had an encore that wasn't on the show with Charlie Caruso.
No, not Charlie
Caruso.
Caleb Braxton?
Is it Caleb Braxton?
I think they're the same person. But, oh, man, it was great.
He's awesome.
And, like, credit to Bugenhagen, not the lad from Final Fantasy VII, this Bugenhagen, that he... This was a match where two squash matches were back to back. Right, you had Mansoor do his squash match, and then you had Bugenhagen come out to be squashed against Drew Gulak. Bugenhagen got over, he was just like charisma, just like flowing out of him. The crowd were like, "Oh, he's good. Yeah. Oh, we like this guy."
It was a smart choice. It was a very smart choice to pit him against Drew Gulak.
Completely,
who is totally his whole character is. I am no nonsense. Just the best technical wrestler here. I don't want anything silly anywhere near me. So, like, you could see the longer his intro went on, the more Gulak was like, I am livid. Like,
yeah.
I am very cross.
That's it. And basically this match...
Stop this silliness at once.
This match essentially was, Gulak is having none of this nonsense. Mm-hmm. It's just like, if you're going to be silly, I'm just going to stretch you out.
Yeah.
And it was great. And it's like, I think because Bugenhagen was so good and got himself over so much, it made Gulak squash even better. Mm-hmm. Because the crowd were then disappointed, and he got general heel heat because he beat a guy that the audience really liked, as opposed to Jackson Ryker just squashing some lads.
Mm.
And I thought it was great.
I just think the Bugenhagen thing is going to great. Like, yeah. Give it two more goes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm going to be like, I'm really fed up of...
Because he does like an abdominal stretch and then plays his opponent like a guitar.
Quite enjoyed
Oh,
that.
My God. It's so good.
Yeah, it was...
Good grief.
As long as he's got more in his repertoire...
Than
like,
just that.
If he keeps coming up with new things...
Yeah, totally.
I like that. But if he's just going to go... I'm going to get annoyed because it's grating.
Oh, yeah, no.
Especially because we, like, the time we watch NXT is in, like, first thing in the morning on a Thursday, like, at 5 usually I'm watching NXT, so yeah. I'm really not in the mood for someone going
I can see that. Gulak has a promo afterwards and basically to say, like, I come all the way to NXT for that. You present me Ben Stiller from Dodgeball. That was great. And I've written him, he's not far off. He does look like Ben Stiller in Dodgeball. And he issues out an open challenge for a submission. So he calls himself a submission specialist and he wants to stretch someone out. And Matt Riddle answers. And this led to a match between Drew Gulak and Matt Riddle. And I think the most telling thing about this match is that I've had quite a few messages from people on social media, on Twitter, and on our Patreon page that have said, okay, now I get Matt Riddle.
Yeah, this match was great.
Like, I was like, I was really skeptical of him at first. Mm-hmm. I didn't really get it. I didn't really like the character. Having seen that match, I now get what Matt Riddle is all about. I now get why you guys like Matt Riddle so much. This was a wonderful exhibition of both Gulak and Riddle. Like, you know, I know I'm sort of really putting over Riddle here because he's the guy that's going to be going for the NXT Championship at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not Drew Gulak isn't. But Gulak was so good in making Riddle look great.
Mm-hmm.
And Riddle was so great in not only just being great, but also making Gulak look good as well. This was an excellent, excellent match.
It was a technical showcase, wasn't it? Really?
Oh, totally.
But it was like, there was just all these wonderful, beautiful holds and stretches and all this different stuff going on. And then they do that for a good few minutes, and then suddenly the pace would pick up, and there was an amazing bit of back and forth where Matt Riddle runs full pelt into Gulak's feet.
Oh, yes.
And he just decapitates himself. He's like, "Your guillotine?" Okay, yeah, here we go.
Yeah, he was doing his running forearms in the corner, and Gulak did a drop kick. And it wasn't like a picture-perfect drop kick like you would see from a Jeff Jarrett or from, you know, from like a Randy Orton or something like that. This was just, "I'm just going to kick you in the face. Well, I need to drop kick you. I need to stop your momentum."
Yeah, he was basically just putting his boots up, wasn't he?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And in the sort of stand, like the way people just do normally. But he just did two. And it just, Matt Riddle just went for it, leathered himself.
And like the stretches that Gulak was doing, he had this sort of like double arm lock in. Riddle's a very bendy man. Mm-hmm. So like it was like wrestling Stretch Armstrong. And it was just like just stretching him around all over the show, bending the fingers and things like that. It was really, really great.
Problem is that stuff doesn't hurt Mr. Tickle. So it's just immune. He was just like, "No, try something new. Tie me in knots if you like."
And here's, I mean, I love Matt Riddle anyway. I like his character. I like him as a wrestler. I like the way he looks. I like the charisma that he has. But here's why I like Matt Riddle. It really dawned on me in this.
Mm.
I get rock hard for deadlift suplexes. There was.
Just love it.
I'd love a deadlift suplex. If you're going to deadlift a German suplex, deadlift front face suplex, just any old suplex. If you're deadlifting it, it's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Luke has the hots for Cesaro.
Oh, mate. Oh,
loves gut wrench.
Him and Tyler Bate, like, they are, in terms of doing their deadlifts.
How many?
And this
Mother
match
Hubbard.
Was, there were deadlifts aplenty in this. Matt Riddle essentially was just like, "How can I deadlift you next? Oh, I know, I'll do this." And he'd just like, just deadlift him out of something else. He was awesome.
Well, my favorite one was towards the end, I think he just sort of scoops him up, slams him down, and Gulak rolls over onto his knees.
Yeah.
And then he gets the Raymond Rowe special knee to the face. And that's what leads to the finish, right? He then goes for a pinfall, doesn't get the pinfall, and then just starts with the elbows.
Yeah.
And then locks in the bro mission.
The bro mission, Drew taps out. That match ruled.
Really good. It's an amazing showcase.
Yeah, really, really awesome. Big fan of Matt Riddle, and I'm a big fan of Drew Gulak. If I had more time in my day, I would watch 205 Live. And that's, you know, that's on me that I don't watch 205 Live on a weekly basis. But I would also say, mate, WWE, you are struggling to fill your 3 hours of Raw at the moment because, like, a lot of your top guys are out. Just put on some cruiserweight matches. You've got them there.
Yeah.
Like, technically, they're still part of the Raw roster. I think that's still the case. The cruiserweights are part of them. But, like, some cruiserweight exhibition matches on Raw and SmackDown would be such a better use of the cruiserweights than just putting them on 205 Live, a show that very few people watch.
Mm-hmm.
A show that very rarely cracks the top 10 most watched things on the network.
Because the stupid thing is, then, you could move those cruiserweight matches that you're having on pre-shows of pay-per-views up to
the main show,
where we can open the main show with a massive amount of excitement.
Right?
Because you're not always going to have Becky Lynch versus Asuka to kick you off, are
Absolutely,
you? You're
going
to have some
yeah.
other nonsense that's rubbish.
Completely agree.
You're going to have
you.
The Revival losing again.
to Bobby Roode and Chad Gable. I just think there's a better use of the cruiserweights in WWE. But then again, I don't think that is the spiciest of hot takes you and I have ever said on this show.
No, absolutely not. But then I just think I think the key now should just be, they should just make the rosters. If they're going to do something like Worlds Collide is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Do something, like we said before, like Drew Gulak going down to NXT, fantastic idea. Same thing. Let's just make all those rosters rotate around.
Yeah.
Like, if you can fit on 205 Live, you can make the weight, you can go to 205 Live and have a match, just to be like, well, these things should all cross-promote, right?
Yeah, totally.
They're all very much network-based things. So why does it matter?
Yeah.
Like, it's not the same rules as like Raw and SmackDown, where you probably shouldn't have NXT stars just keep coming up and doing stuff because there might be like, we want this specific roster, or we will have, you know, there's that sort of thing going on. You can just do that. So let's just rotate them around, get their faces out there. And you can hope that if people aren't watching 205 Live, but they see someone on NXT was on it, they'll go there. Or if someone from 205 Live is on NXT or NXT UK, they might follow them back.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a really good use of 205 Live guys. We said this with who was it that came down to NXT? And obviously we had Tyler Breeze,
Tony Nese.
That was it when we first started doing these reviews. Yeah, so I thought overall a very, very solid episode of NXT, particularly just for that Matt Riddle, Drew Gulak match, and of course Bugenhagen.
Boogs.
And I really like that. I'm in love with the Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa storyline. Mm-hmm. And now you've got this very interesting sort of women's division picture where Io Shirai and Kairi Sane have got pins over Shayna Baszler, but Bianca Belair, who thinks she is the bestest, has not got a win over her.
She should try tying her up with the hair. Like in sort of like an old Western, like a railroad tie and then just lay her down.
Oh, there was an amazing moment.
Get your shoulders up now, Baszler.
There was an amazing moment during like the celebration because Belair was just like, I don't want to raise your hands, but I guess I'll have to. Mm-hmm. Like raising the hands, very sort of reluctant to do so, forcibly smiling to be like, yay, I'm glad we won. And they're like, she's looking at Io, who's on the like motioning, doing the waist things. So like, I'm going for the championship now. She's looking at being like, I'm so happy for you going for the title. And then you got Kairi Sane trying to celebrate with her hair, and Bianca Belair go, no, you're not. Just no, I'm shutting this down now. Like I will clap with you, but no, we are not playing with each other's hair. None of that now. It was wonderful.
Not until I can have the hat, but you already gave it away.
We got this question in from Marcel Jura. I picked this up with Ollie on the SmackDown show, talking about how that we do get like NXT specific questions coming in and emails coming in. He did not seem best pleased about it.
No,
because he was almost like, what?
I'll be left out.
Exactly, feeling a bit left out, right?
Have more defined hobbies and interests, Ollie.
That's what I would say. But Marcel emails in to say, hi, Luke and Laurie / Ollie. Since I'm a professional author of an RPG adventure book, brackets Call of Cthulhu, Shadowrun, Opus Anima, I really enjoy you guys talking about your D&D parties. But there are more RPGs than D&D, so my question to you is, what other tabletop RPGs do you play or are you playing, and what are your characters? Have fun and thank you for your always entertaining reviews and rambling. Hope to see you at 16 karat gold. Highly unlikely. I wish we could.
Gutted.
I'm only playing D&D currently. That's only because I've got time to literally play one game. I've got enough time in my week to dedicate to one adventure, and that's the adventure that I'm playing.
There's a lot of other RPGs I'd like to try.
You got me for Christmas.
That's Blades in the Dark.
That's the one. Yeah,
that's
really
a sort of heist based RPG in which a lot of it happens sort of retroactively. So like you go into the sort of heist or something. So you say you're breaking into a mansion, you break into the mansion through an upper window, you come out of a bathroom, you see a guard. You can then, in that, instead of like engaging the guard in a fight or whatever, you can come up with a reason why you can get past them by being like, oh well, in the planning phase of this, I actually bribed this guard. And then you roll to kind of see if that's happened, or like you're trying to escape and you need to jump out the window, and you're like, oh, fortunately, I paid this cart puller to put his horse and cart underneath with a bale of hay in it. And so we jump out the window and you land in the cart of hay. And it's all this kind of sort of retroactive storytelling, which is quite cool, like almost like flashbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
That's quite fun. That's one I really want to try. I've got. It's called Worldwide Wrestling.
Yes, because you got the big wrestling one.
The wrestling one that I need to
really popular.
I need to try and do that at some point.
The way I understand that, it's sort of storytelling, and the DM is essentially rolling to see how the crowd is reacting to that, and like the other members of your party sort of provide commentary for the matches. From what I can gather, anyway, I've only seen sort of like bits and pieces of people talking about it online. But that is, again, that's another one I'd really want to try, actually.
When I get time, I'll read the book.
Well, this is it. You know, you and I, we're men in our 30s. I've got a wife, you've got a full-time girlfriend.
Full-time, not even part-time.
Exactly. Like, there is limited time that I have available. Like, a friend of mine sent me a message because I was talking about how little I've been playing Resident Evil 2. And he's like, you know, I've got a kid, I manage it. And I'm like, dude, like, I get up at 5 to watch wrestling. And then by the time I get home, it's like 7:30 in the evening, getting on towards 8:00. Like, I need to have food, wash up, prepare lunch for the next day, and go to bed. Yeah. Like, I've only got a finite amount of hours.
You need to get up at 4. Yeah, and you can play Resident Evil for 1 hour, and then you can watch
that's
wrestling.
That's the key to it, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Or have wrestling on in the background while you're playing Resident Evil.
Yeah, but then I can't take notes. Because it's funny, because I was talking to my wife about this.
Dictaphones is probably the best thing to do.
Yeah, because I was talking to my wife about this. When I first started working at WrestleTalk, I tried for like a week or so to take notes, well, like to watch wrestling while I was doing DDPY. Like today, I would do yoga while I was watching wrestling. So my thought process was, well, I'm watching the wrestling and I'm doing my stretches and this is fine. But I found that I wasn't paying attention to the wrestling. I was just focused on doing the yoga, or I would finish doing the yoga and then realize I'd forgotten everything that had happened and it would have been a colossal waste of time. So I found that the only way I can really watch wrestling is if I'm sat down and watching it.
Yeah, like, you're like, Bugenhagen wins the match with the downwards facing dog.
Exactly, yeah. I can't even do it like if I'm on a treadmill because then I can't take notes. Mm. Like people have said, like, oh, just get on a treadmill. How do you write notes?
Are the names for the moves in DDP yoga? Like, has he renamed all the yoga things?
Sort of. A lot of them are more or less the same.
Downwards facing road dog.
Yeah, well, one. I mean, you didn't go with that one. But, like, so the warrior poses are road warrior
Forgotten
poses.
Forgotten sun salutation.
Nice. That's about the only one I can really think of. Like,
those are the two yoga moves
I know. When you sort of like lie back and sort of stretch your arms out, that's like you're a dead man and things like that. Kick out, so when you sort of like go real tight and then you just release. So there's like some wrestling bits and pieces in there. But really, like, I mean, DDP was talking about this on Joe Rogan's podcast, that he's renamed it to DDPY because he doesn't want it to be considered yoga anymore.
Right.
Because it's grown past just being, you know, a form of yoga.
It's a way of life, man.
Pretty much. What a nice guy. Like, there's a real stark contrast. I've been listening to some Talk Is Jericho podcasts quite recently, been kind of catching up on those. He did a fabulous podcast recently about the Mandela effect.
Yeah.
Which I'm fascinated by. I think the Mandela effect is a really, really interesting concept. I think it's really cool. But the woman that he had on there talking about it at times really did sound like, you know that Simpsons episode where Milhouse is like, then why did I have the bowl, Bart? Why did I have the bowl? That's how she sounds. And then right at the end, Chris Jericho is like, right, before we go, I just want to talk to you about the interactions you've had with aliens. And I'm like, okay, I'm tapping out. Like, yeah. No. She may believe this, and I to a degree also think there is something to be said about the Mandela effect, but when you start saying like, oh, I've spoken to aliens, now I'm on a higher plane, I'm like, I'm tapping out of your conversation. Yeah, I'm sort of moving past this.
More people would say this if it was a regular thing.
Like, I can buy more into this idea, this Sinbad movie, the Shazam movie starring Sinbad, where he played a genie. Right. Because there are people who are disparate apart from each other across the country who have the exact same memory. Like, that to me is a better example of the Mandela effect than someone who said, like, I spoke to aliens and I think it's all to do with CERN. I think they are messing with atoms. They are messing with particles. And then saying, like, Coca-Cola has got a different logo now. Our timeline has said it's different. And Jericho's like, what do you mean Coca-Cola's got a different logo? She goes, it used to have a dash in it. And in my head, I'm like, it's still got a dash. And she's like, yeah, the dash is higher now.
Have you heard of rebranding?
That's exactly it. Yeah. And like, she keeps saying, like, lines in movies are different now. And I'm like, you've just misremembered the line of dialogue. That's quite common.
Yeah, like, yeah, misremembering and then forming a new memory of the misremembering is a really big deal.
Yeah.
Like, that's like what a lot of people kind of feel like deja vu is, right? Like,
yeah.
The idea that you've had a feeling before, or your brain is catching up to what you've actually already experienced. So you're like, oh, this, I've heard this before. And it's like, no, you heard it a second ago and then you've just thought about it. So I don't know.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, she keeps saying, like, the example of Darth Vader's line in The Empire Strikes, spoilers for Empire Strikes Back, where he's like, Luke, I am your father. It's like, that was never the line. That's it's a famously misquoted line.
Yeah, it's actually Luke, who's your daddy?
And what does he do? but that is quite famous of a misremembered line, a misquoted line that has become pop culture, and now people assume that is the line.
Exactly, yeah.
And like, if someone has not seen The Empire Strikes Back but would probably recognize that line, then of course that's going to be their memory of that line. The timeline has not changed.
And everyone does it in a voice. Like, you know, exactly. It's not like, yeah.
Yeah, so she went a little bit offside. But anyway, point I was going to make about DDP before I got sidetracked, there is a real stark difference between DDP on his episode of Talk Is Jericho, where he's just talking about like how great things are at the moment, how he's really loving wrestling and he's loving DDPY, he's really putting over Cody and the things that the All Elite Wrestling crew are doing. Mm-hmm. And the one he put up today with Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, which was recorded on his cruise. Jerry, lovely. He's having a smashing time. He just wants to chat about memories. JR, on the other hand, surly, bitter JR is no fun to listen to, because they'll be talking about, like, you know, oh, do you have any memories of Raw? And JR will go like, there's one time on Raw, kids today don't know how to wrestle. You do three moves and you don't sell anything. How much? And I'm like, all right, JR, like, why did you bring that up?
Yeah.
Surly JR is no fun. It's the reason why I stopped listening to his podcast.
He's still, but he commentates on all this stuff. It's like, if you don't like it, stop talking about it.
If any of our Ramble Club listeners, the original version of Ramble Club, maybe the second or third iteration of Ramble Club, will have heard this. But Ollie and I did a review of one of the New Japan American shows they did last year, the New Beginning shows.
Yeah, and it's way worse. Also, like, don't work for New Japan if you don't like people kicking out a move, like, or not selling moves.
Yeah, it was a Juice Robinson match. Yeah. And JR is so surly throughout the whole match, just complaining and whining. And it really took me out of most of the matches, because I'm like, God Lord, if you don't like it, JR, stop doing it.
Yeah, but it's also that thing of just like, also, like, you know, I was reading an interesting thing about nostalgia earlier that was saying, like, the idea of nostalgia is kind of the longing to return to a previous time, right? So the longing to return to a previous state. And that's why a lot of people have nostalgia for video games, specifically. Like, because it's literally a time capsule that will look the same whenever you go to play it. It will feel the same. And actually there's muscle memory there that when you start playing stuff. But, and also because new technology moves at a rate where people of our age, we're going to reach a point, Luke, where suddenly you're going to get something new, you're going to get a new phone, you're going to go, I don't understand this. And like, there are lots of things about computers and stuff. Yeah. There's lots of things like, I don't understand things in my phone. I'm I don't know how to do this.
No
idea. I don't know why it's in there. I don't want to touch it.
I want
a Nokia 3210. Yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah, I've once tried to use Snapchat. I didn't get it.
Yeah.
No idea.
But this is the point. So like, some people react to it badly. Like the fact that you just don't want to move on.
Yeah.
And JR is one of those guys. He's got a nostalgia for an era in which, you know, you could talk about the one powerbomb that happened for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And that could just be the thing, rather than having to go, well, this move happened, and then this move happened, and then this move happened, and then this move happened, this move happened, this move. Maybe it's just the frequency of things he has to call now, because no one's selling moves. Yeah. Like, everyone's no-selling for a bit. And then it's like, now they're down. Okay, well, I can finally say this thing that I had in my head for 5 minutes.
So. Yeah. Totally.
Maybe. I don't know.
Anyway, I feel like we've gone way off course.
where do we start
with
that?
Well, we were talking about RPGs. but that is actually all we've got time for on this episode of the podcast. Thank you for listening, and apologies once again for it being late. Also, apologies if there's been any audio issues, teething problems. It's a new setup. I think it should be fine.
Hopefully.
I think it should be fine. I don't think we're too close. I don't think we're too far away. I think we've pretty much nailed this, but... apologies if it has sounded...
The braggadocio of that.
I was just going to say, apologies if this has sounded absolutely toilet for the last 20 minutes. It's not our fault.
Luke's just gone, oh, we nailed it.
Oh, we've done this so good. But thank you for listening. Ollie and I will be back tomorrow with the magazine show, talking about the AEW rally that happened in Las Vegas, where they've got new signings, they've announced new matches for Double or Nothing, so there's plenty to talk about, and the future of pro wrestling in general. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you then. Take care. Love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.